cell phone so my mom can't check. Brilliant, I said. I picked up my bag. Ready? Let's do this. I looked out to make sure no one was watching. Then I locked our apartment door and we walked down the hall and out the building. The 7-Eleven was only 50 yards from my home. Jack wasn't there yet, so we went inside and got cherry cola Slurpees and sat on the curb to wait. What if he doesn't come? Austin asked. He'll come. Besides, I'm paying him $300. Where did you get $300? My mom's emergency fund. I rubbed one foot with the other. If there ever was an emergency, this is it. About 15 minutes later, Jack's Camaro pulled into the parking lot and up to the gas pumps. There he is, I said. Austin squinted. Who's that in the car with him? Wade. Austin's eyes widened. You didn't tell me Wade was coming! Sorry, it was part of the deal. I hate Wade! It's no big deal. You don't understand! I really, really hate Wade! Like if you were in a shark tank and reached up to me for help, I'd throw chum in the water! Austin has a great imagination. Look, I said, we don't have a lot of options. Wade can help drive. Besides, he's not going to do anything to you. He's afraid of me. Austin just shook his head. This just keeps getting worse. Jack and Wade both climbed out of the car. Jack walked up to me. I need money for gas. I took the roll of bills out of my pocket and counted out 150. Here. Half now, half when we get there. He stuck his jaw out a little. Fair enough. Wade looked at Austin and smiled. Hey, I know you. I didn't recognize you with your pants on. Stay away from me! Relax, Wade said. That was before I found out your friend's a taser. He smiled and went inside the store. Austin and I carried our packs over to the car. Jack opened the trunk and we put our things inside. Jack finished filling the car with gas about the time Wade came back out. He had pork rinds, mini donuts, beef jerky, and a six-pack of Red Bull. Let's go, boys! Sit him back, Jack said to Wade. What? I want to talk to Michael. But back now. Wade scowled, threw Jack the bag of jerky, and climbed in the back seat. Austin stared at me with the look of a man climbing into a snake pit, but he got in anyway. I shut my door and Jack fired up the Camaro. I think he'd taken off the muffler to make it louder because it roared like a jet. He looked over at me and smiled wryly. California, here we come. Chapter 28. Road Trip. A few minutes after we were on the highway, Jack turned to me, offering his open bag of beef jerky. Here, help yourself. I took a piece. Thanks. He set the bag to his side. If you want more, it's right here. He rubbed his chin. So how long have you been shocking people? After all the years I'd spent hiding my power, it was strange talking so openly about it. Since I was a kid, I said. Like 2 or 3. Do you know how much it hurts? I shook my head. Not really, I've never been shocked. From the back seat came Austin's first words since he'd climbed into the car. You've never been shocked? I don't think I can be, I said. So, you could, like, grab a power line and it wouldn't hurt you? Wade asked. I don't know. But when I was 4, I chewed through the vacuum cleaner's power cord and it shorted out in my mouth. I just remembered it tickled a little, and afterward I felt really good. Wait, Austin said. You mean it's possible that electricity makes you stronger? Like I said, I don't know. I've never tested it. You could, like, eat batteries, Wade said. No, I said. They'd break my teeth. Austin looked happy again, as he finally had something to think about besides Wade. We need to test this, he said. I'll think of a way to test this. Chapter 29. According to Plan. Hatch sat back in a tucked leather chair in his plush, mahogany-paneled office at the academy. Four flat-screen television monitors played on one wall. All were set to different channels, but all of them were covering the same story. In the past hour, two British Airways jets leaving London's Heathrow Airport had crashed shortly after takeoff, strewing wreckage across miles of coastland. He watched it all with a knowing smile. His phone buzzed.
Sir, your phone call.
Is the line secure?
Yes, sir.
Put him through. Hatch lifted the receiver. Hatch. The voice was gravelly and coarse, with a slight British accent.
I just heard the news. Well done.
Just as planned.
BA's claiming mechanical difficulties.
That's a little hard to swallow with two wrecks within the same hour, but not surprising. They have to tell the public something. So far there are also three terrorist groups claiming responsibility, but they're late to the party. We gave British Airways a specific schedule a week in advance. There will be another accident each day they don't meet our payment schedule.
Has any money been transferred yet?
Not yet, but it will. We're offering them a bargain. Those 747-800s are going for a little over $300 million each, not to mention the lawsuits and loss of business. British Air can pay the ransom or shut down.
Who's next?
Emirates Airline. As soon as they saw the British Airways crash, they responded to our demand. First payment is $75 million. With all that oil money, they won't even miss it.
Where's our boy?
Still in London. As soon as we get payment, we'll move him to Rome.
Very well. Take good care of him.
We have a whole contingency with him. He's got more security than the Queen.
Too bad we don't have a few more just like him.
Hatch smiled. We might. We found the last glow.
You found Michael Vey?
Yes. And we ran a diagnosis of Vey's E-patterns. He has the strongest L-waves we've come across yet. He could be the most powerful glow of them all.
Promising. Where are you keeping him?
We don't have him yet, but we have his mother. And he's on his way to Pasadena right now. He has the idea that he's going to rescue his mother. He'll be disappointed to learn that she's not here.
Will he cooperate?
You know what it's like bringing in these glows when they're older. But he's been living just a little above poverty. And like I said, we have his mother. He'll be persuaded.
Inform the board the moment you have him.
Of course. Hatch set down the phone. He loved it when a plan came together. And everything was going according to plan.
Chapter 30. Chickens and Eagles. Upon their return to the academy, Tara and Griffin helped Taylor carry her purchases to her new room on the third floor of the building. A beautiful, well-lit suite across the hall from Tara's. The room had wood floors with a thick Persian rug and a 200-year-old antique French armoire across the room from her four-poster bed. The room was much larger and nicer than hers at home, and had its own bathroom and walk-in closet. Taylor noticed that the windows didn't open, and were made of something other than glass. Tara had assured her that it was for her protection, not to keep her in, but Taylor still had her doubts. While she was thinking about where to put her new clothes, Tara walked in.
Need any help?
I'm just deciding where to put it all.
Tara picked up one of Taylor's new skirts.
I think we should share clothes just for the fun of it. I've always wanted to do that, but no one here is my size.
She turned back to Taylor.
So, are you excited about your party tonight?
I guess.
You don't sound excited.
I'm still homesick. Tara walked over next to her.
I know, but once you get to know everyone, you'll feel a little better.
Taylor sat on her bed.
I don't know about that. I really just want to go home.
Don't you miss your family?
What do you mean?
The family who adopted you.
Oh, they're gone.
Gone? Tara sat on the bed next to her.
Well, I started coming to the academy when I was six. I'd stay here all week, then sleep at home on the weekends. It was a good arrangement. Then one day there was an accident. My parents' house caught fire, and they didn't get out. Fortunately, I wasn't there, or I probably would have died too.
Taylor was stunned.
That's horrible.
Do they know what caused the fire?
The fire department said it was an electrical fire.
Ironic, huh?
Taylor had a sick feeling about it. All the fun of the day drained away. She thought about the man visiting her house and talking to her parents. She hoped one day her house wouldn't catch fire, too.
What if it wasn't an accident?
Tara squinted.
What do you mean?
Taylor saw the look on Tara's face and decided against pursuing it.
Nothing, she said. So the state let you stay here? Fortunately, in the school contract, there was a clause that, in case something happened, Hatch received guardianship. I was so young at the time I don't remember much. I've lived here most of my life. This is my family. That's why I'm so excited for you to join us.
How many live here?
9, counting you.
Will Nichelle be there?
Yeah, but just ignore her. That's what we all do.
Tara started counting on her fingers.
There's Quentin. He's the cute blonde. You'll like him. And he's a flirt. There's Brian. He's Puerto Rican. Big muscles, but he's really immature. Kylie, who I love. She was my best friend until you came along. I think she might be a little jealous of you, so I'll give her some special attention tonight. Zeus. He's kind of cute, but I need to warn you that he kind of smells, but don't say anything to him about it.
I usually don't tell people they stink when I first meet them, Taylor said.
Tara grinned. It's not really his fault. Because of his electric makeup, he can't bathe without shocking himself. Anyway, he's really sensitive about it.
Taylor nodded.
Then there's Grace. She's really shy, so it'll take a while before you get to know her. And there's Tanner. He's out of the country right now on an assignment.
How many of us are there?
There were 17 of us in the beginning, but there's only 13 of us left. And some of them aren't in the family.
What do you mean, left?
Tara frowned.
Don't worry about it.
Taylor looked down. Hearing that 4 of them had disappeared scared her as much as anything else that had happened to her.
Do they all have powers? She asked.
Every one of them.
What kind?
All sorts. We don't really talk about that. I mean, of course, we know. Like, Zeus can shoot electricity like lightning. Brian can burn through things. And Kylie's like a magnet, which means you don't ever give her your credit card because she ruins them. And everyone knows what Nichelle can do. But it's more of a gossip thing. Dr. Hatch says we don't talk about it because it's like in the business world. Employees don't talk about each other's paychecks because it causes problems.
Tara glanced up at the clock on the wall.
Is that really the time?
I think so.
She grabbed Taylor's hand. Come on, we can't be late.
The girls hurried downstairs to the main floor. The other youths had already arrived, and the dining room was loud with chatter. The dining room tables had been brought together to form one long rectangle, large enough to seat the whole family. Taylor and Tara were the last to arrive, and every eye followed them in. A handsome blonde boy stood as they entered and smiled at them.
Wow. I'm seeing double.
I'm Tara, Tara said.
And that makes you Taylor, he said, slightly bowing.
I'm Quentin. I'm the student body president. Welcome to Elgin Academy.
Hi, Taylor replied shyly.
I mean, thank you.
Welcome to the family.
He took her arm. Let me introduce you to the rest of the gang. That's Brian.
Woohoo!
Brian said, pumping his fist in the air.
I'm number 1!
He punctuated his claim with a loud belch. Number 1 dork, Quentin said.
I told you, Tara whispered to Taylor. Immature.
And that's Zeus.
Zeus bobbed his head. Taylor noticed that he was seated with spaces between him and the others, and she remembered what Tara had said about his smell.
That's Kylie and Grace.
Hi, Kylie said tersely.
Grace looked at her but said nothing. Quentin said to Taylor, don't take it personally. Grace is a little shy. She's that way to everyone at first. He looked at Nichelle, who was sitting alone at the far end of the table. You've already met Nichelle, he said. Nichelle glared at Taylor.
There's also Tanner, but he's out of the country. You'll meet him in a couple of weeks. Since you are the guest of honor, Dr. Hatch asked me to seat you at the head of the table. He will sit to your right, and Tara, Quentin said. Dr. Hatch requested that you sit on Taylor's left side.
Whatever you say, boss, Tara said.
Tara led her to the front of the table, and Taylor sat down. Brian said, Hey, you guys look alike.
We're twins, idiot, Tara said. You're such a dork, Kylie said to Brian, rolling her eyes.
Taylor looked around.
She caught Zeus staring at her. He looked away. She thought he was cute.
A moment later, Dr. Hatch walked into the room.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. I was just finishing up a call.
He sat down at the head of the table.
You've all met Taylor?
I introduced her around, Quentin said.
Thank you, Quentin. Now I expect you all to make her feel right at home.
Where are you from?
Kylie asked.
Idaho. Where's that?
Kylie, don't embarrass yourself with your ignorance, Dr. Hatch said flatly.
Taylor said, Idaho's on the other side of Washington, above Utah, west of Montana.
Thank you, Taylor, Hatch said. I guess I'll have to talk to Miss Marsden about her geography lessons.
Hatch lifted a small brass bell next to his plate and shook it. Waiters immediately appeared with platters of food. The chef had prepared a remarkable feast, though Taylor wasn't very hungry after the lunch they'd had. The servers brought in trays full of beef Wellington, Yorkshire pudding, and roasted lamb with vegetables and potatoes. Taylor filled her plate, but mostly just picked at it as she glanced back and forth at each of the others. Quentin was definitely in charge and the most popular of them all. She guessed that Kylie and Tara had a crush on him, and Zeus seemed jealous of him.
Do you find the cuisine agreeable?
Hatch asked her.
Yes, sir, it's very good.
It's not pizza, but hopefully it's easier on your stomach than the sushi.
Yes, sir.
I think you'll like the dessert as well. We're celebrating some favorable news we got out of the UK today, so everything is English. In keeping with the theme, dessert is an English trifle.
Yum, Kylie said. Yum, yum, yum.
You're such an idiot, Nichelle said. And you're an ugly psycho freak, Kylie said.
Ladies, Hatch said. Enough.
Sorry, they both said to Hatch, but not to each other.
When they'd finished their meals, the waiters brought out the trifles, as well as cake, fruit, and pudding served in tall crystal chalices that looked like parfait glasses.
This is delicious, Taylor said.
Overall, I'm not a huge fan of English cuisine, Hatch said. But they do some things right.
As the group was finishing dessert, Hatch looked at his watch, then again rang the brass bell. The head server immediately appeared.
Yes, sir.
Pour the champagne, please.
Right away, sir.
The server walked back into the kitchen, then returned with a dark green and black teardrop-shaped bottle. He moved quickly around the table, pouring a small amount of the sparkling amber liquid into each glass. Taylor had never tasted champagne before. She watched the bubbles stream upward in clean, bright lines.
You drink champagne?
She asked Tara.
Tara smiled.
Of course. We're treated like adults here.
She leaned close to Taylor as if sharing a secret.
Quentin told me the champagne is more than $3,500 a bottle.
Taylor couldn't comprehend it.
That's like $300 a glass, she said.
Just then, Hatch rose from his seat.
Ah,
he said, sniffing his drink.
What an aroma. A 1995 Claude de Bonnet. Simply divine.
He extended his glass in front of him.
I'd like to raise a toast to the newest reunited member of our family, Taylor.
Everyone lifted their glasses, including Kylie, who hadn't said anything since Hatch's reprimand.
To Taylor. May our dreams be her dreams, and may all her dreams come true.
Hear, hear, said Quentin.
Everyone began tapping glasses, except Nichelle, who just took a long drink.
In honor of this special occasion and other good news, I have a very special treat. I have secured front row tickets for tonight's Colby Cross concert at the Staples Center.
Everyone cheered.
Colby Cross? Taylor said. She's my favorite singer.
I know, Hatch said as he stood. So we'd better be on our way. The limos await. At Hatch's lead, everyone stood and followed him out of the room, Zeus and Nichelle leaving last. As they climbed into the car, Taylor said to Tara, I can't believe we have front row seats to Colby Cross. I told you Dr. Hatch would take good care of you. You have nothing to worry about. Taylor sighed. It's just the way everything started. Being kidnapped was really scary. I know. I think he's trying to make up for that. Just keep an open mind, sis. You'll be glad you did. Taylor sat back into the leather seat, and for the first time since her abduction, she really smiled. Maybe Tara was right. Maybe what she'd read in Dr. Hatch's mind was false. After all, he'd been nothing but generous and kind. Maybe if her parents had known how well the students were treated, they would have wanted her to come. She didn't know what to believe anymore. Front row seats, she said again. It's just so hard to believe. Believe it, Tara said. It's your new life, Taylor. First class, front row everything. A half hour later, the limos pulled up to the front of the Staples Center and everyone got out. Once inside the arena, an usher checked their tickets, then escorted them to the front row. As the group was walking to their seats, a large, muscular man with his arm around a woman bumped into Zeus. Hey, watch it, Zeus said. The man looked over his shoulder and grinned. Dude, you stink! Take a shower! The woman laughed. Zeus turned red. Is that your girlfriend or is farm town missing a goat? The man stopped and turned around. What did you say? Did I stutter? I called your girlfriend a goat. The man flushed with anger. You're gonna die, loser. He came at Zeus, grabbing him by the arm. I'm gonna... Bolts of electricity shot out of Zeus's fingers. The man cried out and dropped to the ground like a bag of concrete. His girlfriend screamed. Zeus kicked the man in the side. Like that loser? Suddenly, Zeus bent over in pain. Oh! Hatch stood above him with Nichelle at his side. Hatch's face was red with fury. Thank you, Nichelle. Glad to help, sir. Just then, two security officers arrived on the scene. The larger of the two asked, What's going on? The man's girlfriend pointed at Zeus. Him! She screamed. He shot my boyfriend! Hatch stepped forward. Excuse me, officers, but I witnessed the entire exchange. The man was acting peculiar, then he just collapsed. Hatch looked at Tara and slightly nodded. Suddenly, the girlfriend began screaming at the top of her lungs. Snakes! There are snakes everywhere! She began flailing wildly. Get them off me! Get them off me! The guards looked at each other. One pulled out his radio. Requesting backup near Section AA, also medical assistance, possible drug overdose. While one of the guards struggled to restrain the woman, the other said to Hatch, Thanks for your help. Don't mention it. When the security guard had turned away, Hatch grabbed Zeus by the arm and pulled him aside. Out to the car. Now. But the concert! He doubled over again. Sorry. It won't happen again. No, it won't. Now go. Zeus staggered toward the exit. Hatch shook his head. Totally against family policy, Tara said. Boy, he's gonna get it when we get back. What will Dr. Hatch do to him? Taylor asked. Nichelle will punish him for a while. She just loves doing that. Then he'll lose privileges for a few weeks and probably be grounded to his room for a few days. Hatch walked back to the group, Nichelle at his side. Sorry about that, he said to Taylor. Zeus knows better than to use his gift to hurt others. Taylor looked at Nichelle, and Nichelle's eyes narrowed as she glared back at her. Let's not let Zeus's unfortunate decision put a damper on things. Our seats await. Their seats were perfect. Front row and center, unlike anything Taylor had ever dreamed she would experience. In spite of everything, she was giddy with excitement. When Colby came on stage, the arena erupted in smoke and pyrotechnics, and everyone jumped to their feet. Taylor couldn't believe how close she was to the singer. Colby started the concert with one of Taylor's favorite songs, Stay With Me.
Several times the singer came to the front of the stage and reached out her hand, and Taylor actually got to touch her. After an hour and a half, the stage lights darkened for intermission.
Michelle, Hatch said,
go get Taylor and me a couple of Cokes.
Okay, she said, glaring at Taylor.
After she left, Hatch leaned over to Taylor. She noticed he had put on his dark glasses.
Are you having a good time?
More than I can say. Thank you, Dr. Hatch.
You're welcome.
We're just so pleased to have you with us.
I'm pleased to be here. I don't know how to thank you. It's my pleasure, really.
But now that you ask, could I ask a small favor of you?
Of course.
I'd like to see your gift in action.
Sometime during Colby's next few songs, I want you to reboot her when I tell you to.
Taylor looked at him.
I'm sorry, what?
He smiled.
Just for fun.
No one will know.
Taylor swallowed.
I don't know.
Hatch's expression turned serious.
I'm asking you to do something for me, Taylor.
Taylor swallowed again. She felt uncomfortable with the request, but after all that Hatch had done for her, she didn't dare disobey.
It's not really that big of a deal, she told herself.
After all, hadn't she done the same thing at the basketball game?
Okay, she said hesitantly.
Just tell me when.
Hatch's expression lightened.
I'll tap you on the sleeve.
The applause was even louder when Colby came back on stage, but this time, instead of excitement, Taylor felt dread. She took a deep breath. What Hatch had asked her to do was wrong. But what choice did she have?
Colby sang a few more songs and Hatch just watched quietly, smiling and even clapping. Every now and then he looked over at Taylor. Taylor began to hope that maybe he had forgotten or changed his mind. He didn't.
Colby was in the middle of Taylor's favorite new song, Love My Love, when Hatch tapped Taylor's arm. Taylor looked at the singer.
Now, Hatch said firmly.
Yes, sir.
Taylor cocked her head.
It was a fast song, and Colby's voice suddenly screeched, then stopped in the middle of the chorus, as if she'd forgotten what song she'd been singing. For a few seconds, she just looked around, unsure of where she was, while the band kept on playing. Then she grabbed the microphone and started singing, starting again with the first verse. At the end of the song, there was a strange hesitancy in the arena, followed by the usual thunderous applause.
Wow, Colby Cross said into the microphone. Never had that happen before. I just kind of blacked out. Early onset Alzheimer's, huh?
That's okay, Colby, we love you, a boy shouted from a few rows back. Colby laughed at herself, and the crowd applauded again.
Taylor looked over at Hatch. He was smiling and nodding approvingly.
Well done, he said.
Well done. Taylor sat quietly for the rest of the concert, even when everyone stood for an encore. She felt sad. She had betrayed someone she admired. After the concert, they returned to the limos. Dr. Hatch switched cars, presumably to talk to Zeus. So Taylor, Tara, Brian, Kylie, and Michelle sat in the back, Brian switching places with Dr. Hatch. Taylor desperately wanted to talk to Tara, but didn't want to talk in front of the others, so she was silent the whole way home. Even when Brian and Kylie got in a brief argument about who was a better singer, Colby Cross or Danica Ross, and they asked for her opinion.
They're both good, she finally said.
Yeah, said Kylie. At least Danica doesn't forget the words to her own songs.
The comment made Taylor's stomach hurt. She was glad when Michelle threatened to silence both of them if they didn't shut up. That night, as Taylor was getting ready for bed, Tara walked into her bedroom. Tara was already in her silk pajamas.
So, what's up?
Tara asked.
What do you mean?
Do you always get depressed after seeing your favorite singer?
No.
Then what's wrong?
Taylor sat down on her bed, her hands clasped between her legs.
Do you know when Colby was singing Love My Love and suddenly stopped singing?
Tara smiled.
That was you?
She nodded.
Dr. Hatch made me do it.
Tara looked at her.
Is that all?
Is that all?
I embarrassed her in front of thousands of people.
Tara shook her head.
Come on, she's a celebrity. They paid her $1 million to sing for 3 hours. I think she'll get over it. And besides, no one cared. You heard that guy yell from the crowd. They loved it. It made her seem more human.
Taylor sighed.
I guess you're right. Dr. Hatch was just seeing you in action. Think of it as a cheerleading tryout. And you passed.
Does he do that often?
What?
Test you?
No. Just now and then to make sure you're on board.
What if you're not?
Tara's expression changed.
You know, you can make this good or bad. It's up to you. It's about attitude.
No, it's about hurting someone else. Dr. Hatch doesn't hurt people just to hurt people. You saw how mad he was at Zeus for shocking that guy. Dr. Hatch is just... careful.
Does he ask you to do things?
Yeah. I mean, not much lately. More earlier.
And it never bothered you?
Nope.
Really? Never?
She looked suddenly pained.
Once. But you get over it. At first you might hate it, but before you know it, you'll volunteer to do it.
She forced a smile.
Why do you care? We're better than them.
Them?
You know. People.
Taylor looked at her.
We're people. My parents are people, Taylor. They're not your parents, and we're not people. We're special.
Maybe you are, but I'm just a cheerleader.
I know it's hard being different, but it's like the story Dr. Hatch tells us about the chickens and the ego.
What story?
Tara's face grew animated.
Oh, you're going to like this. It goes like this. A farmer once found an abandoned eagle's nest with an egg inside. Out of curiosity, he took the egg home and put it under one of his chickens. The chicken hatched the egg and took care of the eagle like it was just another chick. As the eagle grew, it walked around the coop with the chickens, pecking at the ground the way chickens do. One day, a wise man saw the eagle in the coop. "How do you keep the eagle from flying away?" he asked the farmer. The farmer said, "It's easy, because the eagle thinks he's a chicken." The wise man said, "But it's not, and it's wrong to keep it in this coop. Eagles are majestic birds and destined to fly." The farmer said, "Not this one. He's sure he's a chicken." The wise man said, "No. Once an eagle, always an eagle." He then went out to the henhouse, picked up the eagle, and threw him in the air. "Fly, eagle," he said. But the eagle just fell to the ground. He tried it again, throwing the eagle higher. "Fly, eagle." But the eagle just fell again and went back to pecking in the dirt. Then the wise man carried the eagle to the top of the henhouse and pointed the eagle toward the sun. "You are not a chicken, you're an eagle. You were meant to soar high above the chickens. Now fly." And he threw the eagle up into the air. Suddenly, the eagle stretched out its wings and took off into the sky.
Tara looked into Taylor's eyes.
"You, me, all of us electric children are those eagles. Dr. Hatch is the wise man. If you just want to keep on pecking through life with the chickens, it's up to you, sis. So, what will it be? Eagle or chicken?" "But I like the chickens," Taylor said.
Tara grinned.
"Come on."
Taylor sighed.
"Of course I want to be an eagle." "Good, then stop worrying so much about the chickens. They don't matter. Eagles eat chickens. It's not because eagles are bad, it's just how they're made."
Tara stood, then kissed Taylor on the top of her head.
"Have a good night."
"You too."
"Light off?"
Tara asked.
"Sure."
Tara switched off the light and closed the door. Taylor lay back looking at the ceiling.
"I miss the chicken coop," she said softly.
She wanted to talk to someone who would understand. She wanted to see Michael. She wondered when she would see him again. Chapter 31. The Road. Austin sat in the back seat of the Camaro, pressed up against the side, reading a book. I could tell he was still mad that I hadn't told him about Wade. For the most part, Wade kept his distance, listening to his iPod and playing his DS. A couple of hours into the drive, Wade asked, "What are you reading?"
"A book," Austin said. "Ever seen one? Ever seen a fist?"
"Knock it off," Jack said.
"Porky," Wade said.
"Oink, oink."
"Stop it," Austin said. "Never seen a hog read before. Are you gonna eat the book when you're done?"
"Shut up." "Oink, oink."
"Hey, Wade," Jack said. "Ever wonder what 1,000 volts would feel like on your tongue?"
His grin disappeared.
"No? Then keep your mouth shut."
Wade sat back and put his earbuds back in. I looked in the rearview mirror. Austin looked pretty miserable. I felt bad for him. For his sake, I wished he hadn't come. I turned to Jack. "Thanks."
"Sorry about that."
A few minutes later, Jack asked,
"You an only child?"
"Yeah. How about you?"
"I've got 2 brothers and a sister."
"Are you the oldest?"
"No, I'm the youngest.
I'm the only one still at home. One of my brothers is in Iraq. He's a Marine." He said this with obvious pride.
"That's cool."
"Yeah, he's really cool. He's even got a medal for bravery."
"How about your other brother?"
His smile fell.
"He's in prison."
I wasn't sure how to respond. I didn't know anyone in prison. I wanted to ask what he'd done, but it didn't feel right. I didn't have to.
"He got really messed up on drugs. He and a guy were stealing snowmobiles to get money for drugs when the owner came out. The guy with him had a gun and he shot the man. My brother didn't even know that he had a gun, but the way the laws are, he's also guilty. So he'll be in prison a long time."
"Do you see him very much?"
"Nah, he's in Colorado. I only see him once a year."
His voice lifted.
"My sister's doing real well, though. She married a guy who owns a chain of tanning salons. They have a real nice home and 2 little kids.
Do you see much of her?"
"Nah. She doesn't have much to do with the family. She got married young to get away. That's because my folks used to fight a lot before my mother left."
I now understood why Jack locked kids in lockers. I'd probably be doing the same if I came from a home like his.
"What about you? What happened to your dad?"
"He had a heart attack."
"Was he old?"
"No. My mom said he had a bad ticker."
"That's too bad."
I looked back. Wade's eyes were closed and he was still wearing his earbuds. I wasn't sure if he was sleeping or just listening to music, but I figured that either way he couldn't hear me. What's Wade's story?
Not good. His parents were alcoholics. His old man used to beat the tar out of him until the state took him away.
He lived with foster parents until they put him with his grandma, but she don't really want him. She's not shy about telling him either. You'd think an old lady would be nicer, but that prune could strip the bark from trees with her tongue. So he just hangs with me most of the time. I'm kind of like his only family.
He's lucky to have you, I said.
Jack looked at me with a peculiar expression.
Thanks, dude.
Then he looked back to the road. I swear his eyes were moistening. I turned away so I wouldn't embarrass him. It took us 4 hours to reach Winnemucca, Nevada. We stopped at a gas station to fill the Camaro's radiator with water. Then we ate dinner at Chihuahua's Fiesta Restaurant. I got a burrito, Jack and Wade got 2, and Austin got the taco platter. We ate quickly, then got back on the road.
"So how do you do it?" Jack asked me.
"Do what?"
"Shock people."
I shrugged. "I don't know. It's like asking how you sneeze, it just happens."
"You can control it."
"Yeah, usually."
"Why didn't you shock us when we shoved you in the locker the first time?"
"Because I'm not supposed to use my power. My mother didn't want anyone to find out. She was afraid something might happen."
"Like what?"
"Like what did. That's why they took her."
"I didn't tell anyone," Jack said.
"I know, it wasn't you."
"So you know who took her?"
"Some corporation."
"This is like a James Bond movie," Jack said.
"What are you gonna do when you get there?"
I'm gonna find my mother. Hate to say it, but even if she's there, it's not like they're gonna just let you in. If they kidnapped her, she's gonna be guarded. I know. I'm making this up as I go.
I get it, Jack said.
He took a drink from his Red Bull and looked back at his watch.
We've got another 10 hours. If we drive through the night, we'll be there by morning.
Then let's drive through the night.
I need to pick up some more Red Bulls.
He reached in back and thumped Wade on the head, waking him. He pulled his earbuds out.
What?
Get some sleep. You're driving from Bishop to Pasadena. Chapter 32. Another Simple Request. That night, Taylor had a dream. She was down on a football field, cheering, while her parents were in the stands looking for her. She kept shouting, "I'm down here!" But they couldn't hear her for all the noise. She awoke crying. A half hour later, someone knocked on her door. One of the servants, a young, dark-haired woman who spoke broken English, handed her an envelope.
"Excuse me, I bother you," she said. "Bless you."
Taylor opened the envelope. "Family meeting. Library. 9 a.m. sharp. Attendance mandatory. Be dressed casually. We will be leaving the academy. Dr. Hatch." Now what? She thought. Taylor got dressed, then crossed the hall to find Tara, but she had already left her room. Taylor didn't know where the library was, but she saw Quentin waiting for the elevator.
"Hey, Quentin."
He turned, his usual smile on his face.
"Hey, Tara."
"I'm Taylor." He stopped and looked at her.
"Of course you are. Sorry, I'll figure it out eventually."
He put his hand on her back. "Do you have any birthmarks or anything I should look for?"
"Afraid not."
"It shouldn't be too hard. You're prettier than she is." Taylor rolled her eyes.
"Yeah, right. We're identical."
They stepped into the elevator and Quentin pushed the button for the first floor.
"No, there's something different about you. I swear it."
Taylor ignored the comment.
"Are we going to the library?"
"Yes, just follow me." A few seconds later, the elevator door opened.
"After you," Quentin said.
"Thank you." Taylor stepped out into the hall, followed by Quentin.
"Do we have family meetings a lot?"
"Nope, just on special occasions."
"So, do you know what it's about?"
"Yes, but I can't tell you. Doctor's orders," he grinned.
"But you'll be glad you went."
They arrived at an open door and walked in together. "If you want, let's hang out today," Quentin said. "And by the way, you can call me Q. It's easier."
"Thanks, Q."
"Anytime.
Talk to you later."
Tara was already inside the library. She was standing next to Dr. Hatch, and they both looked at Taylor as she entered. Taylor was sure they had been talking about her. Brian was the last to arrive, his hair sticking up on the side of his head as if he just rolled out of bed. Tara left Hatch aside and sat down next to Taylor.
"Morning, sis."
"Morning."
"Good morning, everyone," Dr. Hatch said.
"Good morning, Dr. Hatch," they said in unison.
"I have an announcement."
He turned to Taylor.
"Taylor, since all of you were born around the same time, having individual birthday parties got to be a little ridiculous. So we started having one large family celebration instead. Sometimes we have great activities here at the Academy, and sometimes we travel to other places."
"Yeah, deep sea fishing off Costa Rica, man," Brian said.
"My favorite was riding bikes through Tuscany," Quentin said.
"That was cool," Tara said to Taylor. "That was last year."
Hatch smiled.
"We've had some good times."
"I was thinking that since Taylor missed the family party, well, since she's missed the last 14, it's only fair that we have one especially for her."
Everyone cheered except Nichelle, who never looked happy. Hatch reached into his coat pocket and brought out an envelope.
"So this morning, we are going to the Long Beach Arena for the X Games Motocross Finals."
Brian jumped up and high-fived Quentin.
"Oh, yeah! Oh, yeah!"
Zeus sat quietly in his seat, looking angry.
Taylor guessed he had been grounded from the activity. Hatch added, "And of course, we have VIP seating. We're so close to the action you can smell the fear."
"All right!" Brian yelled. "Smell the fear! This is gonna rock!"
There was a chorus of thank yous, which Taylor joined.
"Thank you, Dr. Hatch."
Hatch smiled at Taylor. "Nothing's too good for family," he said. Then he added, "For my Eagles." What he said bothered her. She knew that Tara had told him about their conversation the night before.
"You know it," Brian said. "We're Eagles! Chickens peck, Eagles fly!"
"So, let's fly," Hatch said. He stood and raised his hands. "The limos await. Pick up your box of breakfast on the way out." Everyone jumped up except Zeus, who was slumped back in his chair, his legs spread, and his hands clasped between them. Zeus looked up at Hatch penitently, but Hatch walked past him without a word. On the way to the cars, Taylor asked Tara, "What are the X Games?"
"Are you kidding?" Tara said. "Don't they have television in Idaho?"
"The X Games are only the coolest thing in the world. They've been sold out for months." Quentin walked up behind her. "So, Taylor, you want to sit by me at the games?" Both Tara and Kylie frowned. "Sorry, Quentin," Dr. Hatch said. "I will have the honor of sitting next to this birthday girl." "Sorry, sir." The kitchen staff was waiting outside in the parking lot and handed each of them a boxed breakfast as they climbed into the limos. Inside the box was a carton of orange juice, a bagel, an egg and sausage croissant, a cup of yogurt, and, of course, a banana. Taylor spread cream cheese over the bagel, then sat back and watched the scenery. She was in such a different world. Half dream, half nightmare. She was feeling more confused each day. Her mother always told her that she was special, that she was going to leave her mark on the world. And here she was. A new life had been unfolded before her, filled with opportunity, growth, wealth, power, and privilege. Just like her mother promised. So why did it all feel so wrong? She looked at Tara and Quentin. They weren't bad. Maybe Tara was right. She needed to trust more and give Dr. Hatch a chance. After all, he had gone out of his way to welcome her. Didn't all his efforts warrant a little consideration? Was he really so bad? She thought back to the time at Harry Winston's, when she saw a glimpse inside Hatch's mind. Could she have been mistaken? What if she was brainwashed? She closed her eyes. It seemed just too much for her to figure out. Sure, she was living a dream, but if it were up to her, she'd wake from it. Deep in her heart, she wanted her little home, her friends from school, and her family. And all the front row seats, gourmet meals, and diamond necklaces in the world weren't going to change that. The limos drove in through a special VIP entrance, and the youths walked to the stadium through a background of X-Game contenders gearing up and revving their motorcycles. Dr. Hatch showed his pass to a security guard, and they were led out to the competition. Hatch was wearing his glasses again, and he stood at the gate and watched as they filed past. "Nichelle, sit on the far end of the row, please." She frowned. "Yes, sir." "Taylor, Tara, you sit next to me." Taylor faked a smile.
"Thank you."
She'd been hoping he'd leave her alone. She was afraid he might ask her to do something again. They slid down the metal bench to their seats as the sound of the motorcycles filled the air like a swarm of angry bees.
"What's the X stand for?" Taylor asked.
"It's short for extreme," Tara said.
Taylor nodded. It certainly was. The motocross jumping competition was one of the most amazing things she had ever seen. Each of the riders took a turn following a course of jumps, hills, and ramps, performing stunts off each one. They not only jumped from ramp to ramp, but the riders would do acrobatics in the air. The first rider took her breath away. He was more than 80 feet in the air when he did a handstand on his motorcycle's handlebars.
"That's incredible," she said.
"That's for sure," Hatch said. "One mistake and you're finished."
"Watch," Tara said. "This next guy is my favorite. He's the first rider to do a double backflip on his motorcycle. Standing right in front of them was a squad of cheerleaders, or at least an X Games version of them. They were more like beautiful dancing girls in bikinis. Still, seeing them filled Taylor with longing. She wished she were cheering. Hatch watched Taylor watch them. "Do you miss that?" She looked over. "Excuse me? Do you miss your cheerleading?" She nodded. "Yes." He smiled sympathetically. "It's too bad the academy doesn't have enough students to field a team. I guess it's just one of the sacrifices of being special. We do, however, have some very interesting connections. If, in a few years, you'd like to be a cheerleader for the Dallas Cowboys football team, I could pull some strings and make it happen." Taylor looked at him in amazement. "Really? I know that's little consolation in the meantime, but still, you must admit that there are some overriding benefits to being a part of the academy." "Yes," Taylor said. "Indeed," Hatch said. He looked down at his watch. "It's almost lunchtime. Taylor, what will you have to eat? They have ice cream, pizza, sodas, hot dogs."
"I'd like a hot dog," Taylor said.
"Great. And you, Tara?"
"I just want an ice cream."
He handed Tara a $100 bill. "Please get us 2 dogs, a beer, and whatever you want."
"Yes, sir."
When Tara was gone, Hatch leaned toward Taylor.
"I've been meaning to talk to you. I wanted to apologize."
"For what?"
"I'm really sorry about how all this started. I can understand why you might think we're terrible. I just hope you understand by now that our objectives are all in your best interest, as well as the world's."
"I understand."
"Tara's explained it," Taylor said, even though she wasn't sure how much she believed.
"Good. The truth is, if you're going to change the world, you don't always have the luxury of time or convention. You can't make omelets without breaking a few eggs, can you?"
"I guess not."
"No, you can't. Now, tell me about your friend Michael."
Hearing him say Michael's name filled Taylor with dread.
"What do you want to know?"
"What's he like?"
"He's nice."
"I noticed from his report that he spent a fair amount of time in school detention. Is he a troublemaker? Rebellious?"
She didn't want to talk about Michael, but she wasn't sure how to avoid it.
"No, he's a good kid. I think he's just unlucky."
"Unlucky," Hatch repeated.
"Well, his luck is about to change."
Taylor didn't know what to say. Just then, Hatch reached into his coat pocket and pulled out his cell phone. "Hello?" Taylor looked back out over the grounds, happy for the interruption. After a few more minutes, Tara returned with the food.
"There you go,"
she said, handing Taylor 2 hot dogs and a beer.
"Give this to Dr. Hatch."
Taylor handed him the beer and dog. She unwrapped her own hot dog and lost herself in the competition. After a few more competitors, Taylor turned to Tara.
"This is really cool,"
she shouted over the noise. Tara smiled.
"The coolest. Didn't I tell you?"
Taylor was applauding an amazing jump when Hatch leaned over to her.
"See that next rider? The one in the yellow jacket?"
She nodded.
"He's really cool."
Hatch said, "He's currently tied for first, and this is his last chance to score. I don't want him to win." Taylor looked at him, wondering why he was telling her that. "I don't want him to win," he repeated.
"Then hopefully he won't do his best."
"Hope isn't the plan," Hatch said. "It's blind faith in luck. It's chance. Winners don't ever leave things to chance. So when he's in the middle of his jump, I want you to reboot him." Taylor just looked at him.
"But he'll crash."
"That's a distinct possibility."
"It could kill him."
"That's also a possibility. But that's the risk you take in these types of sports. Why do you think all these people are here?"
Taylor's forehead furrowed with concern.
Hatch leaned back, his expression changing some.
"I'm not asking much, Taylor. I just want to see if you have what it takes to fit in with us."
Taylor swallowed. Below her, the rider rode up to the platform at the top of the ramp. He had removed his helmet and was waving to the excited crowd while cameras flashed around him. He blew a kiss to a woman holding a baby, who Taylor guessed was his wife. Then he pulled his helmet back on and began revving his engine. Dr. Hatch leaned back and sipped his beer. Tara looked at her, then leaned close.
You gotta do it, Taylor. He's not kidding. He's asking me to kill someone. He's asking you to prove your loyalty, chicken or eagle, sis. I can't do it.
Tara looked at her nervously.
You have to.
No, I don't, Taylor said.
You don't understand. You have to do what Dr. Hatch says.
What if I don't?
Tara's eyes widened with fear. You don't want to find out.
The motorcycle took off. It dipped low, then shot off the end of the ramp, sailing 60 feet in the air. Camera flashes popped as the bike sailed through the sky. The rider twisted back and was in the middle of his second flip when suddenly the bike went awry. The crowd screamed as the bike landed sideways on the opposite ramp, flipping tail over front while the rider flopped across the ground behind it until he slammed into a retaining wall below a long row of bleachers. The rider lay motionless. The woman he had blown a kiss to was running toward him as emergency crews sprang into action, accompanied by the sound of a siren. Hatch stood and looked at Taylor, then Tara, his face bent in anger.
We're going, he said fiercely, brushing past Taylor. Michelle, with me!
The entire family stood. As they slid down the bench, Taylor said to Tara,
What happened? I didn't do that!
Tara was furious.
All he asked for was a show of faith. Was that too much? He asked me to kill someone. So what?
So what?
Taylor said. How can you say that?
Tara turned on her.
They're just people.
The limousines were waiting where they'd been dropped off, and the drivers jumped out at their approach, opening the car doors. Even though no one spoke to her, Taylor could feel everyone's anger directed at her. She wondered how they all knew. Hatch didn't say a word the whole way back. At the academy, the driver opened the door and Hatch climbed out, followed by the other three girls.
Tara, go to your room and wait for me.
Tara furtively glanced at her. There was fear in her eyes, and they began welling up with tears.
Yes, sir,
Tara said, and quickly ran off. Taylor was afraid for both of them.
Hatch pointed at Taylor. You come with me.
Nichelle looked at her, a half-smile crossing her face. Taylor shivered.
Yes, sir, she said.
Taylor followed Hatch to the elevator. He pushed a button marked D and they descended. When the door opened, they stepped out into a dark corridor. Taylor followed Hatch while Nichelle quietly followed a few yards behind her. They stopped in front of a heavy metal door. Hatch turned to Taylor.
Would you like to explain to me what happened?
Nothing, sir. I didn't do anything.
Precisely.
He shook his head.
After all I've done for you,
all I asked for was a simple demonstration of loyalty and gratitude, and this is how you thank me. Taylor was terrified.
But he fell. Hatch tapped his glasses. I can see when you use your powers.
Tara decided to step in for you. I will deal with her later. She was only trying to protect me.
Yes,
and deceive me.
It's my fault.
Yes, it is. If you had acted with integrity, none of this would have been necessary. He opened the door to expose a large, dark room.
I'm so very disappointed in you, Taylor.
I extended a hand of friendship, and you bit it. I had sincerely hoped we could do this the easy way. I guess I was wrong. He grabbed her by the arm and pulled her into the room.
You're hurting me, Taylor said.
You have no idea what hurt is.
But you will.
Nichelle, Miss Ridley needs a little lesson in gratitude. About an hour's worth to begin with. Oblige me. A sadistic smile lit Nichelle's face.
I'd be happy to.
Nichelle stepped inside the dark room, and Hatch shut the door behind the girls.
He could hear Taylor's screams even before he reached the other end of the corridor.
Chapter 33. The Lesson. Taylor was curled up on her side, shaking with pain. Her clothes were soaked with sweat, and her face was streaked with tears.
"Please, stop,"
she sobbed.
"Please."
"I'll stop when Dr. Hatch tells me to stop."
"You're one of us. How could you do this to us?"
"It's what I do."
"You hurt others?"
"We all do what we were born to do. Out there, I'm no one. If it weren't for the Academy, I'd be flipping hamburgers somewhere. But in here, I'm a VIP.
"You're a sellout,"
Nichelle sneered. "Aren't you the saint? In the end, everyone sells out, even the saints."
"You're wrong,"
Taylor said, her voice strained.
"Some people would rather die than hurt others."
"Well, you might just get your wish." She walked over and slapped Taylor on the head. "Did I hear you're a cheerleader?" She cleared her throat. "Were a cheerleader." Taylor didn't answer. "I hate cheerleaders. Stuck-up, shallow imbeciles." She crouched down next to Taylor. "Don't you know how stupid you look out there shaking your pom-poms?"
"At least I'm not hurting anyone."
"No? How about all those girls who wanted to be cheerleaders and weren't pretty enough or popular enough? You think you're so good? It's easy to be good when everyone's kissing your feet, when you have perfect skin and teeth." She grabbed Taylor by the hair and lifted her head. "In here, you're no one, cheerleader. You remember that. You can't even walk unless I say so. If they let me, I could drain you like a bathtub and watch you die. So how about a